Everybody, please be seated. This is case number 55453, Schlack versus Economic Opportunity Board of Clark County. Mr. Sarb for the appellant and Mr. Sterling for the respondent. Mr. Sarb, you ready to proceed?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is John Sarb, and with me today is Robert Marshall. Together we represent Tammy Schlack, who was injured in an automobile accident and had to undergo several lumbar surgeries and is in a fair amount of pain. So it brings us to the issue today is whether the Economic Opportunity Board of Clark County should enjoy the statutory cap on tort damages, even when it's not performing the NRS 410305 eligible entity functions that conferred the political status on EOB. There are 3 points that I would like to make this afternoon. How and why they came to this political subdivision status, why they do not deserve it in this case, and what a more appropriate resolution of this matter might be. Now, EOB is a private nonprofit corporation. Normally, it would not be accorded statutory cap on damages. But EOB is an anomaly. It's a product of the Lyndon Johnson's War on Poverty. It was a creation of the Economic Opportunity Act of 1964. And that act set up very elaborate federal and state machinery for dealing with poverty. The idea was simple. The federal government would set policy, set programming, grant the money. They gave it to states. The states reported to the federal government progress. And the states then selected what were called community action agencies to actually operate programs in particular geographic areas. There could be only one community action agency for a locale. Mm-hmm. And for example, at the time of the accident, Nevada had 14 community action agencies. 10 of them were government agencies, county governments. 4 were nonprofits like EOB. EOB was specifically created to be the community action agency. I mean, that's why it came into existence. Had to have a specific board of directors, a particular makeup on the board of directors, 1/3 of whom had to be elected officials. It reported to the state. And one of the things the feds expected, the federal government expected, was that the community action agencies would have political subdivision status or at least some way to limit tort damages. And they wanted to preserve those funds, those very limited funds, for their stated purpose. EOB operated that way for about 20 years, and then in 1981, the big change came, the so-called Reagan Revolution. Converted all of those grants that had been coming in to a block grant called the Community Service Block Grant. The block grant philosophy gave the states more latitude, but it also gave them a lot less money to actually run the programs. All of the old requirements, though, carried over, and the new local agencies were called eligible entities, and of course our law was changed to accommodate the eligible entity designation. But there still was a political subdivision status, still the governor designation required, the board makeup, and all of those things. Now, Tammy Schlack's accident was on October 27th, 2004. By that time, EOB was a very, very different organization than it was conceived to be in 1964. It had multiple funding sources, multiple programs, And in fact, of its budget, less than 10% of it was community service block grant money.
Do you concede that on October 27th, 2004, EOB, in fact, was a community action agency?
When I got into this case originally, I would have said automatically yes to that, Your Honor.
It appears to me in summary judgment they put forward the AGO and the affidavit of Keisa Rogers that established in 2006 it was of that quality and that it had been previously. So it was incumbent on the responding party to put forward something to refute that. And on this record, it seems to me we need to accept that indeed it was a community action agency at the date of the accident and move on to other issues. Would you agree with that?
I have no problem with that. I mean, I think it's fair to infer that they were. I haven't seen the documentation I would expect to see, but I think it is fair to infer they were the community.
Yeah, I agree. The record's very sketchy.
I think, we can move fast.
And, Mr. Trevor, let me ask this. I'm not familiar with the legal structure of these entities. It's Economic Board of Clark County. It's a corporation. You said a nonprofit corporation.
Yes.
Yes. And is the only shareholder or member of the Clark County Commission?
No. Its board, when it was created, was, and again, it's specified by federal regulation, one-third elected public officials.
I'm talking about the ownership, not the directors, who owns this corporation.
It's a private, not-for-profit corporation. I mean, it's the...
Private corporations, like homeowners associations, or the members of the association are the owners here. I mean, I assume it's Clark County is the owner, but I didn't know if there's some other structure.
Clark County does not have ownership of Economic Opportunity Board.
Did you know who does? Or?
Quite honestly, Your Honor, the notion of ownership in a private nonprofit corporation is absolutely foreign to me.
Okay.
And I've manned for years.
That's okay. I just didn't see that. I was kind of looking for that and reviewing these materials.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's no stock, for example. There's no.
Well, I know there's no stock. There's probably a membership or something
But the governance, those in control of it, would be the Board of Governors.
Okay.
And they are one-third elected officials, one-third consumers, one-third business leaders by federal regulation. That's the way it had to be.
Okay. Could you direct your attention then to the next piece of the argument? If it was a community action agency on the date of the accident, your argument is what? That the activity in which this agency was engaged fell outside the ambit of its protected status?
Exactly.
And if so, what evidence do you rely on to make that argument, A, and B, what law do you rely on to support that kind of division of authority?
Mm-hmm. When the entity that operated the van that hit Tammy Schlack was called the EOB Community Action Partnership Transportation Division. We simply do not know what relationship that had to Economic Opportunity Board. We do know that that entity had the authority to enter into contract.
EOB had the authority to contract.
The contract in question was between the EOB Community Action Partnership Transportation Division. You can find that at Appellate's Appendix 1, 222. That's who owned this van. And they had a contract with a company called Logisticare. Now, Logisticare is a Georgia for-profit corporation. Their business is arranging, brokering Medicaid transportation services for states. And they had a contract with Nevada. EOB, or this EOB Transportation Division, was a subcontractor to Logisticare, who had a contract with the state And it was simply one of the providers of transportation services in Clark County for Medicaid recipients.
Did you ever name that Logisticare as a defendant in this action?
No. We didn't learn of Logisticare until actually after the close of discovery.
Okay.
So that straight line accountability that gave EOB its quasi-governmental agency character, fed states to them, is completely distorted now. The state of Nevada, with a contractor for Logisticare, who has a subcontractor, EOB Transportation Division, among, of course, several other subcontractors providing that service here. It's not the same line of accountability, and it's certainly not the same money paying for this service. And I think if you look at the case law on determining political subdivision status, it focuses really on two things: the nature and extent of government control, and is the public treasury going to be impacted by what this agency does? And here, the state of Nevada or Clark County, no government entity had any kind of day-to-day say about what EOB Transportation Division did in this Medicaid bus service that they were running.
But isn't that part of the old Johnson program carried forward, that it would be state autonomous and then the state delegates autonomy to the community action agency?
Yeah, but the community action agency now with...
Not autonomy, but I mean the authority to control its business.
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Just that it's sort of inherent in the nature of it. What I'm getting at is legally, if you have a community action agency as a defendant, and they come forward with a judge motion saying, look, this is what we are, and this is what we were doing, and they have a reprimand from that they issued to the truck driver or the van driver in this case, claiming responsibility for this, what legally would take that outside the ambit of their political subdivision protection? That's the problem I'm having with this case.
The service does not have the same governmental controls over it that one expects from a political subdivision, and the funding source is not the funding source that is specifically the one that, if you will, earns the
immunity.
Political subdivision status.
Do you have case authority that supports making that distinction?
The
or statutory. I don't see it in the statutes.
As you can imagine, there's been a whole lot of litigation about CAAs and this very issue over 40 years. The closest case that we found, and I think we cited it in the brief, was probably the Greater Hammond Community Services v. Mutka. It's an Indiana case, 1998, 699 Northeast 2nd, 257. In that situation, it was an 86-year-old woman who was a passenger on a van operated by Greater Hammond. Van has a wreck. She's injured. Sues Greater Hammond, and Greater Hammond then had a contract with the Community Action Agency. And in fact, Greater Hammond, if you look at that, at least in part patterned itself after the Community Action Agency to get this contract. The Indiana court said, okay, Community Action Agency, fine. That has the political subdivision status. But Greater Hammond, no.
But that was a separate corporate entity in Greater Hammond through which they were operating. In this case, is there any proof that it was a separate entity?
We frankly don't know what it is. It has a charter, we know, but we don't know if it's a separate entity. It may or may not be.
So you don't know, because that would distinguish Greater Hammond, that there was a parent corporation and a subsidiary or an affiliate. As I read that case, that's clearly in that case.
Yes, I would agree with that.
And here we don't have that necessarily.
No,
you're saying it might exist, but
I don't know. What we do have is, like Greater Hammond, though, was a contract that the court said, hey, you contract with the CAA, doesn't make you, doesn't, you don't get to dovetail the political subdivision status. And what we have here is, well, one way I look at this is I think of 11th Amendment jurisprudence. And if, which I think is a more appropriate way to examine EOB's role in all this. And if you did that, I'm thinking of Austin v. State Industrial Insurance Commission. That's a federal district court case that was considering whether or not SIS, State Industrial Insurance Commission, was in fact a state agency shortly after it was created in the middle 80s. And if I hit red here, okay.
You're out of time.
All right.
Could he complete his thought?
Sure. Oh, absolutely. Of course. Complete your thought.
All right. The thought was that there is that test. I'm sure you're familiar with it. First question is whether or not the public treasury is, the state could nominally be a defendant. Second, if the answer to that's yes, you look at four things. The source of the entity's funding, the legislation establishing the entity, the nature of the responsibilities assigned by the legislature and legislation in the Constitution, the extent of controls and mandates assigned to the entity by the Nevada legislature. If you applied that test to EOB or the EOB Transportation Division at the time of this accident, there's absolutely no way they would be regarded as a political subdivision. Thank you.
Stewart, on behalf of the respondents.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Bo Sterling on behalf of the respondent in this case. We sympathize with the plaintiff in this case. From what we know so far on this bare record, the injuries that the plaintiff sustained are substantial. But the argument, unfortunately, is basically that the result in this case is unfair. But of course, that's not enough to set aside EOB status as a political subdivision, as it clearly is under the statute. The appellants haven't provided any case law or any statutory authority to set aside that status, and EOB is entitled to claim.
Mr. Sterling, is this Transportation Division, is that just a DBA used by the EOB of Clark County, or what is it exactly?
I don't know if it's in a DBA, but what it is, it's just simply the EOB acting through one of its parts. It's not a distinct entity in any sense. It's simply the EOB, just as one any other kind of company or entity might have different divisions. It's all part of the same company. It's an informal division of responsibility within the company. It's not a separate entity. And the best evidence of that here is they haven't sued the Transportation Division as a separate entity, as we would expect them to do if indeed that's really what they were looking for in this case. I understand that the record in this case is sparse. It's not the kind of record I would prefer to come up to.
Wasn't there some sort of stipulated judgment entered into an open court? It was reduced to an order reserving the appellants the right to appeal on this, on the cap issue.
That's absolutely right, Your Honor, but to be perfectly frank with the court, that's not the reason why we have a sparse record in this case. The summary judgment motion simply wasn't perhaps developed to the extent that we might have liked. But again, I don't think EOB was required to come forward with very much at all.
What do you do with their argument, though, that the state contracted with the non-community action agency, who's not a defendant, whose name escapes me, and then they subcontracted with
this,
and that therefore the Hammond case really does apply, if not literally, at least the intended scope of its holding, which is that you can't expand governmental immunity and sort of huddle these corporations together. If one touches another one that has this immunity, then bingo, everybody's immune.
That's right. I think the most direct way to address that is the factual predicate. Looking on page 222 of the appendix, which appellants have directed us to, all they're looking at is the title of the document. In essence, it just says that this is a contract between LogistiCare and EOV Community Action Partnership Transportation Division. The recitals themselves, the agreement itself, doesn't really lay out exactly who the entities are. The fact that they referred to themselves in an informal manner, not exactly as the registered name of the public entity might be, I don't think necessarily means that that's in fact a separate entity. I think that's an awfully far a reach there. And in fact, we have the affidavit from the former employee, which doesn't go into great detail about the nature of what the transportation division is, but the transportation division, the name itself suggests that it's simply part of the EOV, regardless of how they might have been referred to in this particular document by whoever drafted it. It certainly wasn't intended, based on its face, to be a waiver or to create a separate entity. There's no paperwork to document the existence of any separate entity. So I think that addresses the greater Hammond cases, the two companion cases from Indiana. We don't have a separate contracted party that we're holding liable. And in fact, if you look at those Indiana cases, the Community Action Agency itself, if we can call it that, the eligible entity, as we might say, was in fact held to be immune. But that separate contracting agency was liable, and another agency that acted in cooperation with the designated agency was liable. But the agency itself was not. And that's the position that EOP sits in here. Their other cases are similarly distinguishable. The other one's the Sanchez case. That's the Pennsylvania case. The court's familiar with that one from the briefing. The main problem there is that the Pennsylvania statutes simply didn't have the structure that ours has. Ours specifically provides that the community action agencies are political subdivisions. That apparently was not part of the Pennsylvania statute. So as a matter of statutory determination, they were trying to define what local agency meant.
Is it your position that no matter what this agency was doing, that it would be acting as a political subdivision?
I think that's the result that we have to reach after this court's decision in 2007 in the Maruzak case that basically said we're not going to recognize any longer, even if we had suggested we might. We never have. Let me back up a little bit. We're not going to recognize the government proprietary distinction as a way of setting aside sovereign immunity.
Now, Maruzak, that was UMC, wasn't it?
That's right, Your Honor.
And the doctor worked there as in the emergency room, or if I remember correctly, or in some capacity.
But in some capacity.
He had some sort of cap because he was working for a Clark County-owned facility. Then.
Right. And in that, I think it was not simply that he was working there, it's that he was part of the university,
right.
Regardless of the fact that there are lots of private hospitals and that might be considered not necessarily a governmental function, providing medical care.
But
the court wasn't even going to go there.
What about his argument that the source of funding was only about 10% the CSBG funding, and the remainder was coming from who knows where but other sources? Do you think that distinguishes that case?
No, not at all. Not at all. EOB is the eligible entity because it has been designated as such. Being designated as such allows it to accept the federal funding, but it doesn't determine whether or not it's an eligible entity. It's simply irrelevant. And I think that answers that question. Oh, I was going to point out also that from my understanding, that all of the eligible entities accept various sources of funding, only part of which is the Community Action Block Grant Program funds.
Yet their activities are wholly immune regardless of the split funding?
Yes. unless the court has any other questions.
Any further questions, Justice Pickering?
Just could you tell me what evidence you put forward, or not you, but your client put forward in support of summary judgment to show what, if you credit their argument that it makes a difference what they were doing, mm-hmm. What evidence was there that what they were doing was within the scope of what the EOB entity would, or the community action entity would be expected to be doing?
I'm not sure that I can remember everything off the top of my head, Your Honor, but mostly it was the affidavit from the former employee.
Okay. The record. And the rebuke to the driver?
Yes. The report.
It's a difficult record, I mean, on summary judgment.
It is, Your Honor. I agree with that. I think this is basically a legal question as to whether or not there's some exception to the political organization status that this court might recognize, and so far we haven't been presented any legal authority for such an exemption. So in that sense, perhaps the facts aren't that important. And EOB did come forward with at least enough to show that, and it's really not even disputed, that EOB is or was the community action entity for Clark County, was for 30 years. And at that point, it's incumbent upon the challenger to come up with something to rebut that factually.
Right, and your position is legally from that showing, that concession, everything else follows?
Yeah, that's right, Your Honor. I mean, I did provide a copy as part of my request for judicial notice of the report, not from the exact year covering 2004, but the subsequent report and request for funding that specifically that comes from the Department of Health and Human Services, the Nevada Department, that talks about EOB as the eligible entity and its sources of funding and how much funding it received and that sort of thing. I mean, I think that pretty clearly would show it. I did contact.
But you can't take judicial notice to establish a hole in the record below. You're arguing that that's confirmatory of the sketchy record, right?
That it's either common knowledge or it's easily verifiable. You know, and frankly, Your Honor, you know, the court doesn't have to accept that, of course, but, you know, I mean, we could go back down to the district court. We could track down the governor's designation from long ago in the archives. We could get the reports from Health and Human Services, although I understand the older ones have been archived. I did talk to Gary Gobelman. He's the one that prepares those annual requests for funding.
But we have the concession in any event that it was sufficient to support summary judgment. That piece of it, that indeed they were an EOB, I mean, community action.
Yeah, I mean, we still have enough in the record.
Sure. Yeah.
Any further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thanks to both parties in this matter, both attorneys. Thank you for your argument, your briefs in this matter. And this matter stands.